And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for another of my favorite segments of the show. Love doing it every week, but this is the part of the show that I really enjoy because I get to ask the questions and I get to pick the brains. And a lot of interesting macro moves going on. And when I see a lot of weird stuff, and I'm not saying this just because he's on, but this guy's got a hot hand and he's been really hot. His stuff has always been helpful, but you know, without further ado, Tony Greer, TG Macro. And Tony, while I'm sitting here thinking about it, introducing you, man, you know, in this business, when you're hot, you're hot. And buddy, you've had a hell of a run here. I mean, again, I've subscribed to you for a long time, and it's one of the reasons I do, just because I think your insights and the way you combine macro fundamental and technical analysis and all that kind of stuff, I think it's spot on. I just really don't know, and I'm not pumping sunshine here, man. I was thinking about this driving into the office today. I don't really know anybody that's gotten the big rotational moves more dead on the money than you have over the last couple of years. It's got to feel rewarding because this has been a difficult market, man. So congratulations to you, but walk us through a little bit, and I'm sure you're going to try to be a little bit effusive about this and push it off. But seriously, what have you cued in? What do you think's really helped you understand this picture? Because like I said, man, of all the strategists, you know, it started short tech, long energy. And then you did what I referred to. I remember you and I talking about it. In my opinion, one of the hardest things to do in this business is flipping around on a successful trade and playing the other side. You did that. What's been the secret sauce, man? I know it's a lot of hard work. I know there is no secret sauce, but just kind of what has been your cue? What have you been really watching, and what's helped you really digest a lot of this stuff and get it so much more right than so many others?
Well, Zach, thank you so much for the dazzling introduction. I'm quite honored. I really am honored to be here to talk with you. You're one of my favorite people in finance, and I listen to your podcast all the time. The one with Rudy was absolutely tremendous.
Thank you, man.
Yep. No, so we'll get to the subject matter at hand. I mean, what I try to do every day when I wake up, Zach, is pride myself on, you know, like a hockey player wants to skate to where the puck is going. I want to see where the markets are going and skate with them, you know, so I don't wake up with an idea. CPI was hot. Rates are higher. Therefore, stocks have to go down today, you know, like something like that. There's a perfect example. I don't come in with any preconceptions at all.
Right.
So for example, today we get CPI hotter, rates go higher, and you look at the tech market and it won't budge. And so the answer is, therefore, what is it going to do? It's going to go up. It's one of those things where if you let the market say what it's doing and be open-minded enough to listen, that's a big part of the secret sauce that I think that I've been able to apply. And it's really applying the science a lot more seriously that I've created to watch markets, you know, and it's kind of like over the years of writing the newsletter for the last 7 years, it's like, you know, refining that process of watching the markets the way I do, which is just paying close attention to performance on a daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annual basis. And if you study those timeframes, sort of like slides over and over again, constantly, when you're looking at the markets and see where things are on the year, on the quarter, on the month, you know, it starts to paint a picture that you can sort of visualize a lot clearer. And that sort of helped me come a long way in markets. So I don't want to steal the floor.
Yeah, no. Well, you the floor's here for you, man. So do you think that view professionally, you've helped me out a lot on this, because somebody once said a value investor isn't made, they're born, right? That I have fundamentals and valuation will always be a very important. It's part of how I see the world, and I can't shake myself from it. You have been one of the people, though, that's helped me look at the importance of the other side, meaning, look, the job is to get it right, not to be right. Right. And so at the end of the day, the market's the ultimate arbiter, right? And it doesn't really matter what we think. Do you think that is more true today? And I don't want to load this question with my own bias, but do you think that is more true today because of central bank intervention, because of governments running insane deficits, because of all of the, you know, the overactive and over-involved central banks, the infusion of capital at every, do you think that's more important today, or is it the same as it ever was?
Yeah, I put it this way, Zach. We were in a period where I felt like, you know, markets were really being like centrally planned, you know, back kind of before we broke out of the volatility zone, you know, when volatility was completely compressed, like right before that short VIX product blew up. I guess it was at the end of 18 or something like that. You know, the S&P was having like maybe a 15 handle range during the course of the day, and rates were at zero or around there. And you're like, what is going on here? That's weird. And now, and I don't want to dwell on that. Like, I'm not a conspiracy guy about the markets. I don't think there's anybody that's in control or any, you know, fast forward to today. And I agree, like, we're seeing crazy things go on and markets are unbridled. Markets are doing what the flock they're going to do. I mean, Bitcoin 72K is fine. Gold 2200 is fine. S&P, ripping towards 5,300, all good, you know, led by technology, Nvidia trading a gazillion times earnings, not a problem, keep going. You know what I mean? Like, the tape is doing what the tape wants. So that's a great market. And it's, you got to recognize that you're riding a bucking Bronco and things can kind of go crazy in all directions. But it's still a bar crawl to me, the way sort of, I've been looking at this rally, and especially with my good friend Nick, we have identified this as a bar crawl where, you can play your breakouts, but if you stay in one sector for too long and overstay your welcome, like any one bar during a bar crawl, you're going to get knocked out, right? Because the trends aren't just extrapolative forever. They're explosive breakouts and there's a move and then that's probably it. You know, it's a bunch of short covering and it sends the sector 10%. And, maybe that turns it into a, better looking chart, but sort of that was the move that you wanted to catch. And then we've got the case where technology is trending now, which is kind of fun. And, to me, it's a carbon copy of the 94, 95 analog. And I don't know if I've gone through that with you, but I look at last year, I just want to get it was 94, where in 1994, we raised rates from 3% to 6% to address an overheating economy and a little bit of inflation, right? Yeah. Stock market down 1.5% in a super volatile year. That to me was last year, right? That to me was 2023. 1995, 1996, 1997, 1998, as you remember, stocks were straight up. Fed funds were in a range of 5.5% down to 4.5%, basically like a 1.5% range for that 4 or 5 year period. And the stock market freaking loved it, right? We had tech tailwinds. We had Amazon. We had, iTunes craze, Sun Microsystems, Cisco, the networking explosion, all of that. And the thing, markets went berserk for 5 years, 95, 96, 97, right into 99. And it feels similar to me. Last year, we had the volatile year in stocks where we did nothing but raise rates, but we found the peak last year, which was the most important thing. And then we got the signal on November 14th that the bond market was no longer concerned about CPI being overheated for the moment. Stocks exploded through resistance levels in November, and they're still following through now.
Yeah.
So
it's funny because you hit on something that I had on my hit list to talk to you this morning. And now I'll preface this with saying, on the fundamental side, it makes sense to me that this is sort of a byproduct of, running 7% deficits to GDP and doing all the crazy stuff that we're doing. But at the same time, I don't want to jump to that conclusion, right? Again, my fundamental bias can shine through, and like you and I both know, markets can stay insolvent a lot, or can stay irrational a lot longer than you can stay solvent. But one of the things I had written on here is, it seems to me that we're in a market, and I think you alluded to this, where there really aren't crashes. There's just sector rotations. That's what my note says, right? Meaning, is that a product of the fact that the market knows that the liquid, remember we talked about, when's the Fed going to pull away the punch bowl, right? Mm-hmm. It's a punch pool now and we're swimming in it. It ain't going anywhere. Is that what this market's sniffing out?
A little bit. I think it could be a little bit of that, but I think that the market, the S&P is doing a great job sorting out winners and losers, right? You know, you made a comment about there's no crashes here, and that's something that I kind of live and die by, where, you know, I am not a fatalist in the stock market. You know, there's several guys on Twitter, we know who they are, that are like, you know, this thing is overvalued by five times, et cetera, et cetera. That's not the game that I play. I can't make money in that type of, you know, mindset. So I guess the point is, S&P sorting out winners and losers. There's no, I don't believe that the stock market is going to roll over and crash. With that idea, look what we just had. The stock market's rallying to an all-time high right now, and we're spitting out regional banks out the tailpipe. You know what I mean?
Rising inflation.
Yeah. With higher inflation, higher yields, a lot of them weren't set up for it. They're taking it on the chin now because of that. They're getting carried out, and the S&P is going, okay, see ya.
Right? Commercial real estate starting to get rocked. No one cares.
A couple things like that. Yeah. Okay. You know, well, where we got? We got reserves on the balance sheet for that. Okay. That bank sunk. Right. Okay. Great. The risk, the debt risk, in my opinion, and this is all, I am no expert in this, and there's 100 guys that you can interview that will tell you a lot more about the credit markets than me. In my opinion, banks are prepared for losses. Their balance sheets are tighter. And a lot of the debt debacles are ring-fenced and firm-specific. And if they're not firm-specific, they're definitely sector-specific. A couple other regional banks take it on the chin. I get that. Down, you know, Zions Bank down 15% on the year, et cetera. Of course, market's going to price that risk into the other banks. But it ain't going to price it into NVIDIA. It ain't going to price it into Microsoft, right? It's just not.
And it takes you back to when Janet Yellen made the comment, and I mocked her for it, but I'm starting to feel like I understand what she means when she said there will never be another financial crisis in our lifetime. At the time, I assumed that that meant there are no problems and we've got a really balanced system. I don't, that's not what she meant. She meant we will throw unlimited amounts of capital at any debt problem, and you guys will play your games thinking there's going to be a collapse, and we're just going to keep papering over it.
Yeah. You know, she doesn't see a financial crisis. So, you know, if she holds up the stock market, then there's no crisis.
Right.
The media will spin it whatever way they want. But if there's, you know, if there's bread lines, there may be a crisis. If the S&P is at 6K with bread lines, we'll probably figure that out. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not happy about it. I'm just saying that's the way we're going.
Yeah.
You know?
And on a fundamental level, at a certain point, it makes sense. Meaning when you sit back and you look at the imbalances and the debts, you don't dig yourself out of this hole. You print your way out, right? You inflate it away. And they're not going to come out and say that. But, you know, I think that, you know, we were talking about this offline. I think Powell even talking about rate cuts right now tells you all you need to know, right? Last week when he made that cut, that comment about being close to be able to ease the target rates or the policy rates, he knew what the CPI number was when he said that. Right? Isn't that an acknowledgement of can't stop, won't stop? Right?
Yeah. That's a good read through, Zach. It is a good read through to that comment that he would have likely have seen this CPI number to say something like that. So, you know, it's not shocking to me that, you know, he kind of forecasted it or telegraphed it a little bit, maybe to help the markets out. And I mean, I don't know the needs to help the markets out with the S&P at 5230, but I don't know, man. You know, things are looking pretty resilient. The market right now is just functioning on pure muscle memory. You know, they're buying technology with rates higher. The whole NVIDIA is flying. You know, the whole thing is back in motion, the whole flywheel. So we'll see what happens, man.
All right. So what is new? So getting off just kind of looking at markets in general here, what is new on your horizon? What have you been watching lately? What's got your noise or what's got your attention? Or is this one of those deals right now when these particular horses are running? By that, I mean, tech and crypto. It has been, and I could be wrong about this, but it's been my observation in the past, when those two are ripping like this, it seems to suck oxygen out of all other parts of the market. Would you agree with that? And is that where we're at? And at this point, it's just play those hot hands.
It's risk on like Donkey Kong right now, man, whether we like it or not. You know, it just is. You know, Bitcoin flying to the highs, Nvidia flying back towards, you know, the middle of the range of the big candle day that we had last Friday. Commodities have suddenly woken up a little bit because the economic data like refuses to give, you know what I mean? There's a couple of things that you could be positive about. For me, Zach, I look at you asked if there was a dynamic that's kind of new for me. If there's one thing that I'm looking at that I want to that I'm using as a barometer to keep my foot on the S&P gas, which I have had it on, and I mean I've probably pretty much time stamped all over the tape that I've been bullish since November, like a raging bull. I need rates to stay in a range. Right. So every time I wake up, first thing I look in the morning is U.S. 10-year yields. Right.
Yep.
If that's in that range, I mean, God forbid. Let's see. God forbid it stays in the tight range that it's in, that it has already defined, the 380, 440 range.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. God forbid it stays in that range for a really long time. Don't look for the S&P to curl over. Right. Just don't look for it. If it breaks a bit higher, you know, then maybe we have a problem. Then maybe I have to sort of adjust my S&P expectations. But as long as it stays within last year's 5% peak and it can go even lower than maybe the 375 that we've seen, you know, on the lows in December. But within that range, that's the serpent of yields that I need for the S&P to keep going higher. So that's kind of that dynamic. And what I've seen lately is every piece of economic data causes a mean reversion in bonds, which is perfect for me. You know, it's like come in, the data's a little hot, data's a little hot, rates are a little higher. Come in the next week, okay, data's a little weaker, data's a little weaker, rates are a little lower, down to the bottom of the range now. And all I know when I see that is, can I buy some more S&Ps, please?
Yeah, yep, yep, yep.
Right, and so that's all. That's my sort of trigger mechanism right now, and that's the sort of biggest dial on my sort of dashboard, if you will, if that's fair, to show you what my new sort of what the new black is in terms of for me staying with my view.
Yeah. Now I know that you're also you're a very disciplined technical guy. Listen to what the market's telling you rather than what you want to hear. But I also know that you're paying very close attention to macro trends. We talked about commodities. This rip in gold to me is significant, right? And the reason why is when you look at what it's been up against, when I see the run in Bitcoin going on, and for gold to break out to new all-time highs here, at least I'm reading Mr. Market, and like, again, you and I were talking offline, we've talked about it a little bit through this conversation. It just looks to me like every part of this market is sitting there coming to the conclusion of, guys, they ain't going to stop the printing press, and we are going to be looking at excess capital for as far as the eye can see. That's what that – now, it might be responding to Chinese stimulus as well, but I'd love to get your thoughts on that. What is gold telling us?
Gold is breaking out and set up to have a $300 or $400 run in like a quick, short time period. I mean, so – Let me like the setup for me is so bullish. It's absurd, right? I could write 1,000 words on this, like at any given moment, but I'll tell you what I'm thinking. So we're number one, technically we finally burst through the top of that 2080 triple top, right? There's number one, stage is set for a technical breakout. If you get a little bit more intricate into the technicals, there's a cup and handle pattern that we're breaking out of, which those to me are like when they're right, they're like, holy smokes, don't fade that thing, right? So there's some more technical juice behind it. Then you've got the fundamental backdrop of central banks selling treasuries and buying gold with the money, essentially, is what they're doing, right? You've got the physical guys that are usually sitting below the markets inhaling gold at last sale. Did you see what they just did in China? Like they just started, there was a physical gold sale in China, and there were literally, it was like one of those things where it was like, I don't know, you know, line porn that they were showing you. There's thousands and thousands of people in China online to buy physical gold. They cleaned the place. They cleaned the place out in you know, the first couple of hours, right? So there's physical buying at the market. The appetite for physical gold right now seems, number one, logical. And number two, like it's really real and it's hard to get your hands on physical right now. So that's like on the physical side of the bull case. And then you've got the sort of exchange side of the bull case where we've got open interest at like 400,000 something contracts, which is, you know, historically in the lower third of the range at very least, right? So depressed and open interest, there's not a lot of interest in general. There's no big spec position to draw a bullseye on that everybody's going to say, whoa, this is a huge spec long here. This has got to get wiped out before it goes higher. Not happening. Total ETF assets in gold peaked at 110 million ounces last year. They have now fallen down through 90 million ounces to like 88 million ounces and on their way lower without a bounce. So there's no big accumulation in the ETFs either. So you got a situation where this thing is breaking out. There's no spec long. It's got fundamental tailwinds. It's got technical tailwinds. And I mean, for me, it's screaming upsize. You know, it's screaming, you know, take this from, you know, a small allocation to a trade position and ride it and trade it like any other risk managed trade position, because the potential is so good.
Yeah.
Right. It's just got great potential to wake up and be up 7% 4 days in a row, you know, because, whoa, something just happened. God forbid. You know, I mean, I'm sure you're following along that I get nervous. I get more and more nervous every day about something bad happening in the world. And I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit paranoid, but I feel like one of those, but I feel like one of those headlines in gold is 2,500 bid, no offer.
Yeah, well, and to make, go in your point about paranoid, man, I think it's the opposite. I think it's somewhat stunning that more bad things haven't occurred. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I kind of feel like we've had the best case scenario really on a geopolitical basis. Look, I know the Ukraine issue. I know what's going on. What I'm saying, the fact that those things have not spiraled into much bigger issues, I think it's kind of a best case scenario on the geopolitical front.
I couldn't agree more. It looks to me like, you know, the oil market is certainly pricing Middle Eastern risk at a donut right now.
Nothing.
Houthi rebels don't care. Whatever they're doing, drones, attacks, blah, blah, it doesn't matter. 78 offered oil.
Yep.
Right. So, you know, that's to me, that's kind of the measure of what the reality is, because you know damn well that if it really starts heating up like for real and stuff starts going back and forth, oil is going to be 90 bid and you'll understand what's happening. You know what I mean? So.
Well, and that should if the past is any prelude or any guide to the future, you're probably going to see that move in oil before you even really hear the news or understand the gravity of what's going on.
Yeah, right. And it'll be like, hey, what's going on here? Oh, gee, oil looks bid, huh? Boy, that's weird. Wake up the next morning to God knows what happened, right? Yeah, I wouldn't
somebody's
be shocked.
Straight to Hormuz again, and somebody's shooting a missile or something like that. Can you imagine what would happen to the bid, what oil and gold would look like if China took a more aggressive stance and even took a step toward Taiwan? I mean, it would moonshot.
It probably it's set up to the risk right now and being short gold is insane to me. You know, like to me, that's the worst trade on the board, the absolute worst trade.
It feels like owning puts on GameStop at $5 a share.
Yeah. It's just like not at this point, man. This thing's breaking out and it's got so much. It feels like it's one fund allocation increase from just going on a run. You know, people start deciding that the 50 basis points worth of gold in their portfolio isn't enough given how gold is performing, what's going on in Bitcoin, watching fiat currencies take a bath. You know, I mean, why is this going on? I mean, I think it's got something to do with our national debt going up $1 trillion every 100 days in this administration. I mean, it's got to have something to do with that, right? You know, nobody's going to write the article in the New York Times that says that Bitcoin and gold are going berserk because we're spending like wild, drunken sailors. But to me, man, if that's not it, kick me in the ass and tell me what is, Zach.
Yeah, well, the other side of it too, and you and I both, we were talking about this again off the air. You know, I've heard a couple people talk about reining this in and cutting back spending and tax cuts. And I'm just sitting there going, dude. That ship sailed over it. Good luck.
Delusional.
Good luck. Yeah. No, I mean, and that's the thing. And you guys like you and I have been talking about this for a long time. This is a road to perdition, right? There's no turning back at this point. Just isn't. You can gripe about it. You can hate it. You can gripe about the Fed all you want. They're not going to stop and they can't.
How about the fact that imagine if the media started concentrating, like, you know, this is like the artistry in, you know, the government media complex. Imagine if the media gave a breath of air to the fact that our national debt is spiraling at $1 trillion every 100 days. And when things go up that fast, you know how parabola trades, it goes up faster, right? So like, if you think that this pace is going to slow down, like it doesn't slow down. There's no slowdown.
No, no.
You know, and so that's why it's like, man, if you think about it, you're like, you look at your account and you're like, I don't have enough gold. Like, no matter what, I don't have enough gold. You know, like, where's the end game in this, right? Who's going to, like, even if President Trump steps in and changes the sort of complexion, you think he's going to slow spending down? I don't think he's going to slow spending down much.
No, you can't. So, you can't.
Yeah, I don't think.
I mean, this is what cracks me up about all the booming economy talk, right? You what are we running? You're running real. What if you're looking at the Fed's numbers and you're taking them as gospel? We're running what 3.5% growth rates over the last two quarters, average it together, right?
Sure.
You're running 7% deficits to GDP. meaning you normalize the deficit to 2.5-3.5%, and you got a recession on your hands. Right. I mean, yeah. Right. I mean, so, but my whole point is that's how you know that isn't going to happen. Yeah. Right. Like they're not going to, you're going to keep running 7% deficits, maybe even more. I mean, you saw the budget proposal Biden put out the other day, $7.3 trillion. Did I remember when a $1 trillion budget was a big deal? I'm old.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. Me too. Exactly. Exactly. That threshold came and went.
Good God. So- and fast.
Yeah. So you just look at it and you're like, imagine if they started covering that, right? Imagine if this was being discussed, right? And so you look at it and you're like, what would happen if they let the cat out of the bag to the public and was like, okay, this is what's going on right now. Bitcoin and gold are going berserk because we are going absolutely bonkers with our deficit spending, right? And this is why treasuries have been down 3 years in a row. And yeah, they've been steady lately, but it doesn't look good. I don't know if you should expect a bull market in U.S. treasuries the way inflation isn't going away for a while. So it's like, what would the world do? They'd be like, oh my God, we have to own gold and Bitcoin now too. So you're like, I better get ahead of this trade just in case the cat ever gets out of the bag. So I'm on my view matrix, but I'm long gold, upsizing gold. I'm back in Bitcoin. I've been long the S&P since November. And I think that's for me, the trifecta to be long in this inflationary environment.
Here's the other thing. On the valuation side, it's been hard. Chase, you know, Chase Taylor, Pinecone, Acro, right? So he's our head of research. He started with us full time about a year ago.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and been a big help. It's been great to have him on board. And he and I have been talking a lot about, obviously on a daily basis, talking a lot about all this stuff. And I've kind of come to a conclusion, man, that is very hard, and it feels like it's sacrosanct for me to even say this. But in a world that we're describing here, it sort of makes sense that valuations are where they're at. And I also think that being stuck in a rut as far as fundamentals and if the market, looking back over the last 120 years, average price to earnings ratio on the market's like 15.8. When you look what's happening with the debt and when you look where the central bank's balance sheets are and all this other kind of stuff, it's been really hard for me to admit this. But when you look around and you put your bias to the side, which I know is the core of what you do every day, much elevated valuation sort of makes sense to me here. I don't like it. It freaks me out, but it sort of makes sense, right? Think about all the factors that were priced into 16 times earnings, right? That's from the days back when things could actually fail. There was real risk in indexes at those points, right? The risk outlook or the risk horizon presented by the S&P today is substantially different than it was 30 years ago, right? So if you bake that in and the fact that you've got a happy firefighter standing behind the market with a giant hose that not only are they willing to use, they're compelled to use, right? Sort of makes sense that valuations are elevating. Sort of makes sense that they're not really rooted to anything because on the fiscal side, it's just Katie Barr. It's nuts, right? It's untethered. So if we're creating dollars with absolutely zero hesitation, why would we expect valuations to maintain around some, right? The market as a whole presents a completely different risk profile than it used to. it as perverse as I think it is, I do think it makes sense.
100%, man. I mean, you know, let's just start with money goes where it's treated best, you know, and now once we've taken the risk of, you know, the Fed was raising rates at an extremely rapid pace to address the inflation that was most clearly spiked by the administration when they showed up, right? And we remember back early in the administration, there were Biden telegraphed meetings between Biden and Powell. And obviously, what was he telling him now in hindsight? This 9% print in inflation, this is a problem. Get rid of it, right? So Powell went, got it, boss, and raised rates and got rid of the 9% print and got it down to a 3% print. And now that the market is convinced that we are not going back to 9%, the chances of a dislocation in the bond market lower on a CPI print that's, say, 5% while 3% is expected and bonds come in limit down, right, with rates flying higher, that risk has been eliminated. So if that risk has been eliminated now, because no matter what, the Fed has got its hand on the tail of the inflation monster, and the inflation monster may get away a little bit, and it may bark and bite a little bit, but the Fed still has their hand on the tail of it, and they can squash it. And so what's the upside risk in an inflation print now? It ain't 9% again, I don't think, because the Fed is going to start hammering away once it gets up to, I don't know, 5% or something like that. So that's my opinion, one of the bull cases that we're kind of that roundabout again. That's why I think that the stock market can handle higher valuations. You know, it's kind of the same. It's just a different route to the same conclusion, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, the other thing is, too, is, you know, if you don't think this, I mean, I could certainly end up being proven wrong. But if you don't think this, in my opinion, you're not paying attention. I don't think that you need to worry about a 40 to 50% decline in the S&P.
I just
don't see it. I don't see any proof, A, that they're going to let it happen. I don't see any catalyst for it as long as you're printing that much money, right? I mean, I don't mechanically even see how it could happen in this
only a completely unexpected large scale blow up black swan type of thing does that to the S&P. There's no
I don't even know what that does, man. I don't even know because the market knows, right? What's coming behind that black swan blow up?
Usually. Yeah, I agree. That scenario is like that's not even, I have that at kind of zero.
I ticked some people off the other day on Twitter because a guy was posting this, you know, here comes the commercial real estate thing and blah, blah. Look, something I would have been posting 4 years ago. Okay.
You learn.
Guys, how many times do you have to see the movie? If we have a big problem that printed money can fix, guess what? It ain't a problem.
I was just going to say, I already lost all that money in the 90s before they, right? I already lost all that money, you dummies. Like, you guys, come on, get with the program.
I lost that money last year.
I paid for the education, guys. Like, get caught up. Go lose the money now. You know, I get it. That's exactly right, Zach.
Yeah, I sat on the sidelines last year after having a really good 2022 and sat on the sidelines last year because, look, multiples can't expand in this environment with rising rates.
Mm.
Oh, yes, they can because they don't care.
Yeah. Not when there's a craze going on. There's a, you know, we got the AI craze. It's, you know, look at the money market funds. That's one of the other part of my bull case in equities. There's, you know, what's the number? $8 trillion in global money market funds. And let's talk about the money goes where it's treated best rule. Right. In the last year, or I would say the most popular thing I heard was, yeah, man, we're socking it away at 5% twos. Right. That was the home run trade. So great. Everybody's socking it away at 5% twos. That's fun. And that's awesome for last year. This year, you know, Nvidia's up 25%. Big tech is up 25%. Semis are up 30%. Momentum stocks are up 20%. How long are you staying in those twos?
Yeah, I'm already out of mine.
Right? Exactly. So I'm saying, how long are you staying in twos at 5% when you've got these disco balls going, oh, see you later, twos. Like, there is risk on over here. And if you don't want to participate, go have a seat and don't participate. But it's happening without you. And then next thing you know, when you get to the highs and the new high, some of that money is going to come into the stock market eventually. Yep. And that's to me, that's like another leg of the bull phase. I don't know where that happens. Maybe that's 5,300 to 5,500. But I think that retail gets tired of earning 5% in twos and has a come to the stock market moment. And I don't think we're there yet.
Now, moving along a little bit on the commodity side, because I want to get your take on this, because I'm not going to lie to you. There's a couple things that have looked really interesting to me. The commodity and sector, we've talked about gold. The other one that I think is going to be exciting is if this breakout in gold, a couple things I want to talk about. So if this breakout in gold is substantiated, I would expect silver to have a monstrous run coming behind it at some point. And then the other one that's really interesting to me still is uranium. There's a lot, man. I had Le Shrub on.
Yes, I love Shrub. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
Oh, I have your podcast with him teed up. I'm going to listen to that on my dog walk today. Was it good?
Oh man. Yeah. He's like you, man. And I really appreciate really smart guys, but everything doesn't have to be esoteric and everything isn't in the high flying. You know what I mean? You listen to these guys where you're like, listen, are we trying to really relate or swap information here? Or is this all about you getting on a podium and sounding really smart to everybody?
Oh, right.
You know, and so he's much like, you know, like you are in that way. Like, hey, let's get down to brass tacks and let's make things as simple as possible. He really got me onto the tin thing, which I hadn't even thought about tin.
Yeah.
And we're really digging into that now. But the two, like I said, that have my interest the most, gold, then silver, uranium. What are your thoughts on silver and uranium?
Okay. We're talking about silver and uranium shouldn't even be used in the same sentence. But
I know.
We'll take them separately. So you're going to hate me for my view on silver.
Okay.
And it's just because
– I don't own any, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some physical, I've got bunches of physical, you know, when I kind of inhaled physical gold, I inhaled some silver as a sidecar along the way, thinking that like, this is the poor man's precious metal. Like, how is this not a five bagger from, you know, $20 or whatever?
Yeah.
And I feel like Bitcoin has totally, totally, totally taken over the role of the poor man's precious metal, right? And not because it's an actual metal or anything like that, but the poor man's precious metal became something that Joe Sixpack can trade on his phone as an expression of fiat currencies are burning and I don't like these political decisions, right? That was kind of the out was always like, oh, I can buy more physical gold and physical silver as an expression of that. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, with Coinbase or Interactive Brokers at your thumb's command, you know, what are you putting a little bit more of your life savings into? Paper silver or metal silver that you have to go, God forbid, that you have to go through a big process to, you know, that stuff is for the metals bugs, right? You're not winning Joe Sixpack over to say, let me go, you know, get a sleeve of silver coins. It'll take me 5 seconds, however, to sell a stranger in Costco on having Coinbase on his phone so he can trade Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I could sell somebody that in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Right. So that's how I feel like it's just taken over so much of the potential capital that would have been like, yeah, I'll give silver a try, but it's not. They get gold. They understand gold because it's basic. To me, silver has got an identity crisis where it's looking like it should be a precious metal, but it's turning into more of an industrial metal with the EV push and things like that. So maybe the industrial players are kind of arbing out the explosive potential in silver. I don't know. You know, I don't really have a strong view on it other than the fact that when it doesn't show up on my performance reports at the end of the day, week, month, and year, I don't give a damn about it. And that's all. It just falls off the interest list. You know, as well as me, if it starts performing, I'll start getting interested and lured into it. But as of now, I'd rather put my next incremental dollar into gold or Bitcoin.
You know, what's funny you say that, and I've never really thought about this in these terms, but you know, like, you know, my firm's setup, we're kind of unique in the sense that, you know, we have a lot of these conversations yet our clients are almost exclusively retail. Right. And so we get a really good feel on that. I've never really thought about it in those terms, but you're right. Silver has what I have seen from silver appetite is always been a late to the precious metals party. Retail trade is dominated the silver trade for me. And I've never really thought about it in those terms, but that has been who I've seen sell or buy silver. And now that, like you said, now they got Coinbase, now they can go buy Ethereum and God knows Pepe coin and, you know, dog whiff hat. That was a new one.
Yeah. Yeah.
$2 billion market cap.
Yeah.
Why would you own silver?
Yeah. I was just on with a young Bitcoin trader that is also he's a Cornell alumni, a wrestler. So we have Cornell in common and he's from this area. And so I was talking to him and he starts telling me about a couple of other coin like Uniswap and stuff like that. And like, to me, like that story is the old silver buyer. Like when I was on the COMEX floor, there was an older guy that used to walk around selling physical gold and silver coins. And the floor traders and brokers who had all the money were buying the gold coins, and the clerks who had much less money, you know, for $300, and the clerks who had far less money were buying the silver coins for $5 a piece.
Right.
Right. So you kind of the way you divided it up like that. And now I feel like that silver buyer is the guy that's taking his money on his phone. And he's like, yeah, let me buy Bitcoin. Now what's this Uniswap? Yeah, I'll buy some of that too. Solana, I'm bullish Solana. Let's get some Solana. Like, forget silver. You know what I mean? It's just a periodic, it's on the periodic table of elements. That's not interested to a Gen Y kid.
No.
Gen Z, excuse me, whatever we're up to.
The other thing, and I don't know if you've looked at the chart. The other thing to me is I feel like there's a pretty, and again, I'm no technical analyst extraordinaire, but the other thing about silver that's kind of stayed my hand is I feel like a breakout is really easy to see, right? You get above 30 and you got something. Until you don't, right? It's dead money to me.
You can set a lot of limits, you know, wake up calls on the upside in silver. And when you start getting called and you start getting alerted by the silver market, then pay attention to it.
Right.
You know, that I'll be all in on something that falls asleep like this for years and then wakes up. Right. That's one of my favorite things in the book, you know, like just watching a security that's in a bull market that kind of goes dormant in the middle of the range for a couple of years and then wakes up. That's, you know, that could be one of the best trades on the board.
That's part of our value with a catalyst sleeve. When we find something we like, we stick it in there. And when we stay disciplined to that, Tony, when we find something that fits the fundamentals and wait for a breakout, I don't think we've had a loser. When we've done
that. Yeah. You know what it's I mean? Like, it, yeah, that's where, like, for me, that's why I had to upscale the gold allocation. It's like, shoot me if I'm going to sit here and watch this thing fail 20, 80, three times and then break out with what's going on, low open interest, low ETF assets, no spec position whatsoever, central bank. Like, if I'm not going to get on board on that trade, then I am not being a trader.
Well, it also fits too with your global way of looking at things right now, right? Which is be sector specific, right? And like we were talking about, markets don't crash in this market, but sectors do. You got to know when to rotate and get out of it. And I, like you said, man, I don't see – it's just really – when you're looking at gold right now, the physical mechanics of it, there's just not a lot to outflow, and the potential inflows are massive, right? I mean – And at the end of the day, it's all about the flows.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's all coming into the metal, which I think is really important, right? Like, here's like one of the things that you're going to see. Gold miners down 5% on the year, right? I mean, you know, the gold bugs still have, you know, 100% hope and conviction in this stuff, right? And you know, Newmont's the same price it was when I was in high school. And these guys, you know, the gold miners are like, no, we're going to hold on to the mining stocks because they're eventually going to catch up. You're like, gold is breaking out like a gorilla. You know, gold can go up to uncharted territory from here. Where are gold miners? You know, oh, they're in the middle of the range of the last 2 years, down 5% on the year. Like, you know,
the last 2 years, man. I mean, 2 years. Except the rally coming out of 2016. And then you remember when the Fed cut or raised for the first time, right? Got us off the zero bound at the end of 2015, beginning of 2016.
Yep.
Gold and the miners ripped then. And then coming out of COVID. Other than that, though, GDX has been trading between that 25 and 30 level for a freaking decade.
Yep. They got hot at the beginning of the year last year, and I think they traded up to 32, 33 level, left a double top on the chart, and they haven't seen it the level again.
Yep. Well, now I will say from on the fundamental side, it's pretty interesting to me, especially the quality streamers, right? Because I mean, if you're betting an upside on gold and you got a quality streamer that's put together good contracts, look, operating costs go up, but their profits aren't affected by it because a lot of them get paid in gold, right? But then again, maybe the underlying equities still don't catch a bid. At some point, though, man, I mean, at $75 oil with gold at $2,200, they're making money, right? Yeah. The miners are making money. But this gets back to our fundamental conversation.
Yeah, it's where's the market valuing in them though?
Right, nothing.
That's nothing. It.
Yeah. Okay. One of the things that I've got to discuss with you, and I've been talking to everybody because I don't know. I think it's fascinating. It's another one of those things that's in the last couple of years that's changed the way that I look at things. And I've learned a lot from it. I am starting to believe, and you may chuckle, maybe you believed this for a long time, but I am starting to believe that interest rates aren't nearly as important as liquidity. And I'm starting to believe that one of the reasons interest rates have been seen as a constrictive thing to asset prices and markets is because they soak up liquidity. And if you override that impulse and you raise rates and you flood the market with liquidity, which is what we did last year, it sort of nullifies the rate hikes. And the analogy I've used is it's sort of like the Fed brushing their teeth and eating Oreos at the same time, right? Like, they're undoing it as quick as they're doing it. Well, what is your take on that? Have you learned anything from that? Like I have, is that something that you believed already? And do you think my assertion's right that liquidity out trumps rates?
Yeah, I agree, Zach. It's something, you know, it's the reason why, you know, Michael Howell at Cross Border Capital became like, you know, one of the most closely watched guys in my arsenal, right? Like, don't take your eye off of that guy, because no matter what rates are doing, when he's telling you about what liquidity is doing, that's what the market is doing. Right. When he's like, yeah, you know, rates are squeaking higher, but I still see, you know, the Fed providing liquidity, central banks generally providing liquidity, stocks are inflating, gold is inflating, Bitcoin is inflating. And when he sees it come to an end, man, get the flying flock out of the way.
Yeah.
And he, you know, that's, you only need one scientist to be able to follow that. Like, he's got it down to, you know, a level that I don't think anybody else has a command on global liquidity like he does. So if you plug that guy into your ear, that's a valuable asset. And so, like, yeah, I'm just agreeing because I'm nowhere near an expert. You know, I can barely figure out and understand how they measure it all. But yeah. I listen to Michael Howell and I can tell when he's bullish liquidity and the spigot is on. And man, Bitcoin 72K explains the whole thing, if you ask me, right?
Yep. Yep. No, and like I've said, I feel like Bitcoin is the perfect indicator because it's just this ideal bucket for excess liquidity, right? Like, it just... it's the perfect bucket for excess liquidity.
Yeah, it's a levered bet on U.S. risk assets, probably most closely correlated to the S&P to the Nasdaq 100.
Okay,
you know, so, like, if you've seen that chart, that's like, they're like an identical match.
Yeah, it's like owning a call.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it provides the same kind of returns too.
Totally.
when we're looking at crypto and just putting on your technical hat. Looking at crypto in general, Bitcoin specifically, where do you're looking at now? Again, I'm not going to hold you to this because we're speculating about future moves. But where do you think there is, like, how big a rally? What are the charts telling you? Where do you think this thing could go?
Well, it's, you know, put it this way, I'll give divulge some information that may turn out to be extremely embarrassing.
Welcome to the world of investing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I finally got I have a day trading account, a larger investing account, and then I have a retirement account, right? They're kind of all different time frames kind of thing. I finally got my retirement account off the zero Bitcoin boundary because I've been chasing it higher with a bid since it kind of broke out technically that hasn't come close to getting hit. There are now it's a thing where you're going to have to race against institutional money flow to get your hands on it because of the ETFs. And we're breaking out to a new high technically. So while I didn't put, you know, a kid's worth of education into Bitcoin at this price, I certainly got myself off the zero boundary, because what if this, you know, like something that goes from 70K to 15K and falls asleep and then even makes it back to 70K again is flat out astonishing, right? Like, I haven't seen that happen too many times. When the bubble bursts, the bubble is usually dead and the balloon gets kicked into the curb and you never hear from it again.
I've seen it once before, man, when Bitcoin hit 17 or 18,000, pulled all the way back down to 3 or 4 and the crypto bubble was over.
Oh, the first time. Yeah.
It went to 64,000.
Exactly. But no other, I can't name another security that came out of a bubble and rebubbled, right? So this is a reflation along the lines of something that I have to pay attention to. And, you know, I preserve some capital to put in again if it dips to 60K, and I have a little bit of capital circled for 50K, you know, so I'm like, okay, that I want to scale down by this, but it sure feels like things have changed on this side of the institutional flow into ETFs, right? Like that commitment to it is a lot more serious than I would have thought. It's lasting a lot longer than I would have thought. You know, one thing that we do really well in my Slack channel is track cryptocurrency and Bitcoin trading. And we hawk these flows every day. And like, you know, just when you think that, you know, the institutions have put in all that they can put in, here comes another $500 million into IBIT in one day. And you're like, holy smokes. Yeah. These people are serious Bitcoin investors. And going through the highs, like, you know, maybe the case for 150K is real and right. I'm not sure, but I'm definitely ambitious enough to put some money at risk and find out, you know. And I understand that I may have just rung a bell getting off my 401k off the zero boundary, and the whole world might be selling Bitcoin to me right now, but it's a move that I think in 5 or 10 years, I'm probably happy with.
I have no idea.
It's going to depend on liquidity.
Yeah. And here's the other thing too. And I'll say this, you know, for somebody that's talking risk management all the time, and I think when you're managing retirement assets, that needs to be something you tattoo on your forehead, right? Risk management. I'm in a funny place with Bitcoin, man, because, you know, honestly, having an allocation and a decent sized one to Bitcoin has really enabled us to keep a core portfolio that's even more conservative and yet still keep up with the market.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, crypto is actually helping us reduce and manage risk.
It's the alpha in your portfolio, man. You know, it pays for a couple of ding dongs, right?
Yeah. Well, and again, it's doing that production without having to size it up, right?
Yeah.
You know, like somebody was saying the other day, and I agree with them, but they're like, hey, good luck if you're benchmarked to the market and you don't have NVIDIA. Well, fingers crossed, we're out clipping the market a little bit this year. And we don't have NVIDIA, and we're underexposed to tech as a weighting in our portfolio, and we're still outperforming by a touch, not by a lot. But a big part of that has been Bitcoin. So, it's one of those things where, yeah, it is potentially dangerous and it's volatile. There's no real internal intrinsic value there. But, you know, it's a thing that's driven by flows. And like you and I have said, those flows ain't going away anytime soon.
No. No, it's becoming a trading vehicle for the hedge funds, an investment vehicle for the, you know, long onlys. And it feels like there'll probably be a lot more slower, dumber money still kind of tiptoeing into it.
Oh.
And, you know, and man, I just don't want to be, I don't want to be a blockhead on the other side of that trade. You know, you fucking do that for too long and you're an imbecile.
Yeah. And poor.
Yeah.
not to mention that. What about uranium, man? What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah.
Uranium, the reason I bring it up is because as we were sitting there discussing the on-again, off-again nature of sector rotations, I feel like uranium has been a perfect example of that, right? You've got, you know, if you're looking at URNM, I think you've had somewhere between an 18 to 25% pullback off the highs, somewhere in that ballpark. Yet the underlying fundamentals, the underlying story hasn't changed at all. What do you see in there?
So we did a pretty smart thing for the for the Navigator subscribers where we were able to, what I suggested was that I sold into the rally, sort of into the highs, honestly, we got rid of our uranium miners ahead, just ahead of the Cameco earnings, feeling like Cameco was only set up to disappoint the markets, right? They had high expectations. They came in literally at around expectations last time and the market sold off. So it took pretty good news, sold it off. We got ahead of that and got out of the uranium miners because it was pretty clear that the trade is in the commodity, right? The miners might be great to own as your equity allocation, sure. But the reality is that the deficit is in physical uranium. And the risk is that the utilities don't write longer-term contracts to acquire that longer-term uranium, and they have to shut down their nuclear reactors and stop producing that baseload power. They're not going to do that, right? So they're going to eventually keep, you know, tacking the uranium on. And when it's at a deficit, you know, where she goes, no, where she stops on the upside, nobody knows. So my idea was we sold out of the uranium miners, got into the uranium Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, and kind of swapped into that trade. So I think you have to stay long. I think it's a great place to stay long the energy space as a sort of fade to the green movement, you know, and as you see the sort of electronic vehicle phase kind of shut down with, you know, producers shutting down their electronic vehicle plants or, you know, Ford canceling the Lightning electric vehicle, you know, those falters, I think all of that stuff is bullish nuclear.
Yeah.
You know, it's like more and more of an obvious solution that, yeah, the sustainable wind and solar power ain't going to cut it. We're going to have to pivot towards uranium. And so I feel like that trade is going to be in motion.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, if you get a chance to buy it on the dip, that's something that is probably also should be a non-zero investment in your portfolio. At least a sliver should go at least into the miners if you're super conservative. And Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, if you're a little bit more risk tolerant.
That's funny. That's funny, man, because that's usually the exact opposite, right? Play the miner, right? Because you get the multiple on earnings and the playing the underlying commodities more. What do you think that dynamic comes from? Why is that flipped around here? Do you think there's that's like market condition?
There's a 50 million pound shortage of uranium every year. There's a 50 million pound deficit, right? Cuppy's got the math down. He's the one that's got it pretty much. You know, it's just like, I guess there's 200 million pounds wanted and there's 150 million pounds mined. And, you know, there's a 50 million pound deficit every year. And so the price just keeps climbing, right? You got to pay a higher iron price to source uranium. It doesn't seem to be that typical market. What do you call it? That market sort of myth that higher prices is the cure for higher prices because they're still shutting down nuclear reactors all over the place, you know? And I understand they're building more and they're building more and more uranium plants, but we haven't gotten to that point where higher prices are the cure for higher prices and there's all the uranium the market needs yet. We haven't gotten to that yet. So until we reach that point and at least there's an even back and forth of uranium market balance, like you get in the crude oil market. So like you get in copper markets and they level off and inventories build, man, seems like a great trade to stay in my opinion.
Yeah. How much are you paying attention to international markets right now?
Zero.
Foreign. Why?
Well, you know, if the Bellagio is rocking, you don't leave. You know, it's like the U.S. markets are like, I've got all the risk-taking opportunity I need here. The breakouts are working. You know, I understand what's going on. My speedometers are giving me good signals in terms of how I need to temper my risk or step on the gas, man. You know, the Millennium Falcon is flying just fine, Zach. I don't need to put a dollar in it. I don't need to put a dollar in another currency to try to find how to make money, man. The money machine is cranking.
So you're pretty bulled up here. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I am. And I'm cognizant that, you know, we are due for a pullback and I'm prepared for that. Like I've got a really tight stop on the S&P position that I put on back in November. So, you know, we're up like 15, 16% on it now, and I'm going to lock in like 12.5 on the way down and I'm going to look to get back into it big. Because I think people think that the first curl over is going to be like an Armageddon move. And if anything, we're going to trade right back to the old highs in either the S&P or the NASDAQ. And one of those levels is going to hold and it's going to be off to the races again, because the stock market is still going to be a great place to put your money if tens or 430 bid at 460, you know, or something like that. So that's how I'm looking. Oh, excuse me, 380 bid at 460, like kind of in the wider range there, but I can live with all that.
The other thing that I've noticed is that this pattern, this breakout to new all-time highs, it feels a lot like the previous breakouts to new all-time highs, meaning you had enough hesitation there at those highs to everybody, right? Market's about ready to roll over, and it doesn't blast through them. It kind of creeps and holds. And then you get 3 or 4, and then that's when the blast off to the top happens. It seems like it's following this exact same pattern that we've seen so many times over the last 10 years.
It really does, Zach. And I remember sitting in a large mutual fund's office with the trader asking me, like, what do you think of the S&P here? And it had just broken through the double top at 1500. No exaggeration. And I'm just like, you know, I'm a little bit new to this, but that's a double top and we're breaking through. So I think it's going to go a lot freaking higher. I don't know. That's what usually happens. And he's looking at me like, from here, the S&P, like 1550 S&P 1600 from here. And I'm like, why not? Like why? Why do I have to be like, you know, dogmatic about it not being able to go up from here? You know, the S&P is built to succeed, right? You know, you want to pick an index that's built to fail. Look at the Russell, right? You start making too much money, you get kicked out of the Russell and they pick up another thing. You know, they pick up another pile of junk.
Right.
You know, the S&P, you know, you start losing money or you blow up, you get kicked out and they replace it with the next disco ball.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point, man. So what is it, the interesting thing about this? And you know, and I guess you, if you are bullish, which I am reluctantly so, but I am for the same reasons you are, you're not seeing the ARK type stuff rally as much with this move. Is what do you make of that? Right, like I'm looking at like the Trade Desk, Shopify's of the world, right? All the Cathie Wood garbage, Tesla, those things appear to have been left out of the party for now. Do you think that they make a roaring comeback? What is your take on that?
It's a great question, Zach. I don't have a great answer for that. You know, I definitely don't have one that rolls off the tongue. I would have to think about it.
Is it just the AI craze? Maybe just if you're parallel or in the same zip code as AI, we're going to give you a bid. And if not.
Yeah, you know, it's like I guess it could be a factor of, you know, all the excess liquidity when there's not a real story going on. It finds the capital finds a place where it can just go GameStop, you know, or whatever, where it just finds a place where, you know, people are just funneling the highest risk dollars into this one thing. You know, and maybe now those high risk dollars are going into a trade that the whole market believes in. So they're a little bit more disguised, you know, and maybe that's the stuff that's buying NVIDIA at 960, you know, and I get that. But, you know, maybe, and I don't know if that's the answer. Maybe it's the people that have gotten so maybe it's some of the money that's sort of gotten crushed in the altcoins that's not coming back, that kind of thing. You know, the old coins, you know, most of them kind of got left for dead. And now, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum really, really separated themselves from the pack in the wake of this sort of ETF thing.
Don't forget dog whiff hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that one too. So I don't know. I guess maybe it's a little bit along those lines, Zach. Is that possible? I'm not even sure. That's a great question, though. A great question why there's not as many meme stock type of activity.
Yeah, I honestly thought we almost pulled – again, it was going to be a hold your nose and just do it. We almost pulled the trigger on a long arc right above 50 on what looked like a breakout to us, and it just never really materialized. And it was interesting to me that so many of this other stuff was ripping, and the Cathie Wood train didn't leave the station with it. And, I don't know what to make of that, but maybe that's that sector rotation thing we were talking about.
Yeah, she's wrong-footed, right? She doesn't have the right stuff in her portfolio for what's going on. I mean, that's why she's missing out. And so, you know, if you don't have the right stuff in your long Tesla for this ride down, you're cooked.
Hey, what a, What a gig, though. I think she's still I think she's still running something like 12 or 15 billion or something like that.
Yeah, what's the management? What's a management fee on that? A lot, Zach. It's a lot of money, isn't it?
I think she's running at like one and a quarter, something like that. Underneath, I mean, she's banking it. I mean, yeah, she's crushing it. I mean, yeah.
She's crushed it. She crushed it. It's over. She doesn't have to make money anymore, I don't think.
No, and I mean, who can take? I mean, look at those returns.
Yeah,
and she's still sitting on that much money. I'm sitting there going, hey, guys, you could allocate 5% to Bulwark Capital. We'd take care of you a lot better.
That's right. I hear that.
Oh, man. Hey, okay. So in closing, I've already soaked up. We've already gone over. But in closing, what else have you got an eye on that we haven't covered, man? What is popping up on your radar that you're getting excited about or that looks something that's just caught your eye?
So the thing that, you know, I've been pretty clear that like my three horses are like gold, Bitcoin, and the S&P for this phase of the move. But if there's anything that are like trailers, you know, home construction is definitely breaking out again and may go on a ridiculous run. Like those stocks were rallying. It's due to a secular trend in the country. And I really think that, you know, they stutter stepped when rates looked like they were going to shoot higher again. And now that rates have been capped and are sideways to lower, I think that that secular trend takes over and the home construction stocks have a really good run. Like I don't have a trade on yet, but I think that that's another good place to try to exploit, you know, some bullish moves. You know, they're up 8% on the year. They're kind of in line with the Qs and software and, you know, and banks actually. So it's like there's a sector that I just think has some upside potential. And I think he's undervalued. It's not funny. Undervalued. I shouldn't say that. People come at me in my DMs. That can rally from here.
Well, hold on a second, though. To be fair, okay, I'm looking at D.R. Horton's stock right now. It's trading at 11 times earnings.
Yeah.
Okay. You find anything at 11 times earnings. Now, is there a reason for that? Of course, right? These things do not deserve premium valuations. That being said, maybe it's not historical cheap. But if you've got positive cash flow and you're sporting a multiple on your earnings less than 20, we're talking Buffett and Graham style deep value here.
It shows up on somebody's screen.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it shows up on somebody's screen. What's cheap in this tape right now? Because I can't find it. It shows up somewhere.
Yeah. What are we looking for? Where is that all in? Not all in, but where is that point that you want to see? Like if I'm looking at a D.R. Horton, where's that point where you're going, okay, we got to get into this thing. Because I've been keeping an eye on it too. And I want to know, and for those of you listening to this, this is one of the reasons that I subscribe to Tony's newsletter. So if you want to know these things, sign up for the Morning Navigator. And I promise I don't get any kickbacks. I did get a nice sweatshirt.
Right on, man. I'm wearing one. These are the most coveted sweatshirts in finance. I swear.
I'm with you. No, I'm just kidding. And it's the Carhartt. It's the thick one. You
exactly. Exactly.
She's got some earth to her. She'll keep you warm in a football game. I love it.
Thank you for noticing, Zach. It's everyone's favorite overgarment. So
That's right, in
D.R. Horton, in DHI ticker, you know, if I had capital that I had earmarked for this stock, I am either 140 bid to try to get in there somewhere close to the moving averages. You've got the 100 day at 137, the 200 day at 127. So I can buy 140s and manage that. And if it breaks on the upside through 160, I probably got to chase it and get off zero, okay. Right? Maybe I put half of it in above there and then reposition the other half. But, you know, these things trend beautifully. They behave utterly like they put in identical moves to moves that they put in their own past. You know what I mean? Where they pull back to the moving averages and loaf around for a little while. And then all of a sudden they go on a run and through the old high, they're gone and they don't come back. Right. And then all of a sudden you'll finally get that pullback to the old high and it'll hold and rally again. Like the behavior there, study price action in home construction and you're a happy man.
Yeah.
Right. So if you can put your chips in that sector, you know, you're looking for any kind of a dip to get in. I think they're in breakout mode. And if the S&P is in good shape, then they're going to be a sector that you can own. And if rates are sideways, like I think they're going to be, then that's a sector that you can own.
Yeah. Funny thing, I'm in the process of buying and selling a place right now, and I've noticed a couple things. A, the price of new construction and the price of existing construction has really come together. It's tightened up a lot, but there's still a massive advantage, meaning if you're buying existing construction, you're not going to get any sweeteners from the builders. right? Yep. And so if those prices are even close to aligned, right? You and I both know there's still a lot of buying pressure out there for houses. Yeah. I don't think we're underbuilt, like people say. I just think we're underowned, right? Just because of, but I mean, you get 30 year money back to sub six.
Zach, yeah, man. I mean, I'm a channel checks guy, and I know that I'm in New York, so I'm in, you know, the higher, I guess, whatever income earning bracket of the country. And I can accept that, but I still think that New York, you know, there's been an obvious exodus from New York to other states, right? That's happening. And also what's going on around me, and I live on a barrier island. So yeah, close to the shore, premium real estate, I get that. But what's still going on around me is people are buying houses on the water and they are flattening them and building something utterly spectacular. And until that trend stops, because nobody's moved into a house that they've bought. No, nobody around here moves into a house that they buy. They buy, flatten, build, and they move into brand new construction at any cost.
Multi-million dollar teardowns.
Yeah. You buy the $4 million beater on the bay, and you flatten it and you build the $8 million, right? That, like, this, dude, is what's
it's same thing around here, man. Same thing around here.
So I understand that I'm like, you know, in a favored geographic location, man, but like, I got to go looking for recession stuff. Like, I got to go get my magnifying glass on. I still can't get to a steakhouse on a Wednesday night in New York City. Like, you know,
I was in Bellevue the other day. I was up in Bellevue with the wife, and we made it a 2-night stay just because we were up there for a charity event. And second night we're there, I'm like, hey, let's go grab a good steak. Okay. We call every stinking steakhouse in that Bellevue area, and there's a lot of them and some really good ones too. Everybody, we could get in before 4:30 or after 9:30.
Yeah.
And I look at my wife and I go, boy, that ain't recessionary. Now,
we're in a
unique place, meaning that our back door, half of everybody works for Microsoft, Amazon, Costco, or, you know, whatever. So everybody's 401ks and pensions and everything are looking really good around here. But still, not being able to get a seat in a steakhouse till after 9:30, it's anecdotal, but it's not recessionary, man.
Man, if it's on your coast, man, I mean, you know, how bad could it be all the way along the way? You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be like that in you know, all the other big cities across the country. It's just amazing to me. It's some phenomenon. Like, the restaurant business is roaring. The hotel business seems to be roaring. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting bad signals, but it's hard for me to find a recession signal.
No, you're not, man. And I think, and unfortunately, I think it's more bifurcation, right? If you're toward the top of the stack, you're doing great. You're doing great. If you're not, I think you're struggling right now, right? But I mean, welcome to the last 15 years, right? Man, just keep pushing that direction.
Yeah, if you don't have the markets to help you survive, I don't know how you survive. You know, like, that's
no kidding, brother. No kidding. That kind of way. Well, okay. So the folks, and we've got a couple. This is, you're going to be your first time being on the new setup. We've added a couple different two different stations in Texas now. So, like I told our folks, I was like, hey, I feel like I fit in great down there. As a matter of fact, I'm heading to Austin here in a couple of weeks. Do you ever talk to Dimitri Kafinas at all, Hidden Forces?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. He's doing a really cool dinner down in the Austin, Texas area for the genius tier of his deal. Have you ever been on his show?
He has had me on. Yes. Okay, we had a really good show a while back. I got great cred from being on his show too. I signed a lot of subscriptions back then that have stayed with me. So that was a great experience.
He's good people, man.
You learn so much listening to him, man. He like replaces half a college education, if you ask me. You listen to every one of his podcasts and you get a lot smarter by osmosis, man.
Yeah. He makes me feel like a chump too, because he brings a new meaning to preparation for an interview.
Right? Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
He is freaking dialed.
We did a 2-hour call before our interview. That was like, I was like, Dimitri, we should have recorded that. And he's like, no, this is just a prep work so I can get my mind. I'm like, oh my God, I got a headache. I got to take a break. I need a cigarette.
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember where I was going with that. But anyway, for the folks that want to listen to this, and I'm not kidding when I say it, I think you and Chase and Dimitri were probably the only ones I pay for research from to get behind a paywall. But anyway, This is why. This
honored.
Intelligence. So where can the folks sign up? Because the Morning Navigator is not expensive, and it gives you a great summary of what you're watching. Run us through the setup here.
Sure, Zach. You can go to tgmacro.com. My products page will show that I basically have two products. Aside from my consulting services, I have my publication businesses laid out right in front of you there. I've got the Morning Navigator for $800 a year. I publish every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I have a calendar in there that shows you exactly when I publish during holiday weeks. And then there is the Point Lookout package, which includes the most valuable thing in there is the membership to the TG Macro Slack channel, where me plus well over 100 of my higher tier subscribers sit and talk about markets all day, every day, 365 days a year. And the people that have recently upgraded to that package have found that to be invaluable as risk managers and people that are following the markets on a day-to-day basis. So I narrate a lot of what's going on in there all day, every day. I'm there for people to lean on. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? I tell them when I'm buying and selling things, and they're like, man, this is really, really helping me. So that's been, that product costs $2,500 a year, but that is a product that runs 24/7 in your Slack app on your phone or on your dial. And you can find me at TG Macro. Your listeners can email me at tony@tgmacro.com. If they have any questions, I don't offer trials, but I have several recent copies of the newsletter on there to give you a great handle on what it's about. And, you know, we're making money this year as we did in the last several years. My clients are happy. I have a live P&L that I keep in the back that measures percentage points and not, it doesn't measure, account management. It doesn't size positions. I literally just count percentage points that I'm able to rack up on trades, and I keep a running total of them, and I keep it very basic. And so that's the whole spiel, man.
Yep. No, well, it's like having an analyst on staff. It's just a heck of a lot cheaper.
Thank you very much, Zach. I really appreciate that.
No, man, it's invaluable to us. And even though I've got two analysts on staff, it's still something that we spend money on. And quite honestly, listening to you talk about that Slack channel, I think we need to do a little upgrade here.
You got it, man. Well, we'll do the friends and family upgrade for you, Zach, because you do a great job. And one of the things that you deserve credit for on every single podcast is you make your listeners think about what's in their portfolio and what's not and what should be and what shouldn't and what should be bigger. And to me, that's the most valuable type of conversation to listen to. And you do it over and over and again. So I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you having me on here to have the talk.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. We've got to do it more often. And I'm sure we're going to have to do this. The one thing I think that you and I can both, we agree on a lot, but looking out of this tape, there's going to be plenty to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is exciting. These markets are amazing, man. I mean, you know, 14 vol doesn't cover the whole story, man. There's a lot going on here. You know, it's really exciting.
No, and that's another thing I'd love to talk to you about if we had time, but this whole trend of people selling index vol and buying underlying issue vol, there's just so many amazing cross currents and things that, like I've said, it is frustrating. It can be scary at times. At the same time, you're watching stuff happen on a daily basis that we've never really seen before.
Yeah, yeah. Consistency is a moving target right now.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm gonna put that on my wall.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, and then on Twitter too, at TG Macro on Twitter, right?
Yep, that's me. That's me. Easy to find.
Yep. All righty, boss. Well, hey, thanks as much. Thanks as always for for coming on and good times as always catching up on the macro stuff with you, man.
Yeah, man. I'm honored to be here every time. I can't wait for the next one because that's when we hold ourselves accountable and we'll keep chugging along from there.
Sounds good, brother. All right, you guys. I hope you appreciate or hope you enjoyed it as much as I did doing it. Enjoy your weekend and keep an eye on managing that risk as always. We'll see you next week. Got another great interview lined up for next week. You're not going to want to miss it. Until then, you're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.